Some of our members are small business owners, and they know the secret to success is usually just that, a secret. So we built American Express Open Forum, an online community that helps our members connect and share ideas to make smart business decisions. We built this for our members, but we made it open for everyone. Connect at openforum.com. This is what membership is. This is what membership does.
All of the podcasts here at the Sideshow Network are now at the touch of a button on your iPhone and iPad. With the new Sideshow Network app, tune into all your favorite podcasts here at the Sideshow Network. Go to iTunes App Store, search for Sideshow Network, and download our free app to stream all of your favorite Sideshow Network podcasts at any time you want. The top comedians in the world are at your fingertips with the Sideshow Network app for iPhone and iPad.
Welcome, everybody, to another installment of Innovation Crush.
Innovation Crush.
I bet you didn't even know he was going to do an echo like that.
I didn't.
That's all pre-written and rehearsed. That was Robert Donez Jr., everybody.
That's me.
My name is Chris Denson, and if you haven't listened to this show before, you should know that it is called Innovation Crush, and we talk to a lot of awesome innovators, people behind really great projects, great thinking, just kind of whatever we can find around the world and under my bed. But that's a whole other episode. So today with us, we have a gentleman by the name of Hame Watt. Do you want to say hello, Hame?
Hello, everybody.
All right. Wow, your radio voice almost sounds better than Robert's.
No, I don't know about that.
Mine's really bad.
Yours is good. Yeah. Hame, what? Tell me about that name.
My father's from Senegal in West Africa, and it's his name.
Ah,
so
nice.
Pretty basic.
Are you a third? Are you second? Are you?
I'm technically
neither. A first of who you are, but
yeah, to be a junior, I'd have to have the same middle name. He has a different middle name, so
got it. Yeah. All right, so Hame Watt, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'll spare a botched introduction and let you do it, and then we can, you know, dive deeper a little bit.
Okay, so I'm an entrepreneur and investor in hopefully disruptive technology companies. I founded a company a couple of years ago, one called BeLife, which is a mobile wellness platform focused on psychological fitness, we're calling it, or mind fitness. Another company called MoviePass, which is the first subscription business for movies in the theatrical window. And I recently joined LA's largest venture capital firm as a partner, a venture partner. And that firm is called Upfront Ventures.
So you're pretty busy.
I am busy.
So
all innovators are busy, aren't we?
I guess so. Yeah, your mind's always running.
Yeah.
That's why the mental fitness part of the game is
pretty it comes
deep.
In handy.
So
exactly.
Tell me a little bit about that. Like where did that idea come from, and what does mental fitness mean?
Yeah. So I've been fascinated with the brain for a long time, and in previous companies, mostly ad related companies, I got excited about consumer psychology and you know how people make purchase decisions. And when I had the opportunity to think about what I wanted to do next, I was working with a good friend of mine, a guy named Paul Campbell. And one day after basketball, he said, you know, what if we could do what Mint did for personal finance for the personal growth or wellness space?
Right.
And so immediately I knew what he was talking about. And we dug into the whole neuroscience world. We'd signed up a bunch of neuroscientists that had been studying sort of what makes people tick, what makes people perform. And the more I realized, the more we spent in that space, the more I realized there wasn't really a whole lot of innovation that was going to the consumer around brain health. And that's really what led to it.
Right. So what does it do? Does it, you know, do I put on a little helmet, like a metal helmet and with antennas on it?
No, we're staying away from the hardware. There are a lot of people doing the helmet thing, you know.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people doing the helmet thing or variations on the helmet thing. We're basically looking at the interventions that neuroscientists and behavioral scientists have done in their labs and have seen efficacy in the labs. We're trying to translate those using great design into something that consumers can use. So it's exercises like meditation. It's cognitive behavioral therapy games. It's things that they're examples of interventions that really have worked in the lab, and we're trying to figure out if they'd work directly to the consumer. In most cases, they are.
That's great. And so, what do you do to test that, right? So you got this idea, you put it on paper, you're like, oh, this is great. You just call a neuroscientist, or what were some of the early steps you had to take to
sort of actually? We hacked innovation a little bit. We hacked a little bit. The way we did, we acquired a company. We acquired a company that had a bunch of mobile apps and psychology-based apps, some of which worked, some of which did not work, but all of which were based on some sort of scientific reference.
Right.
And so from there, we met the entire community, really, of scientists focused on wellness or focused on psychological fitness, mostly positive psychologists or neuroscientists. And from there, we built on that base. We partnered with folks like Stanford that have a behavior change mm-hmm. lab that are doing really interesting things around that. And learned and built some apps that we put in front of the consumer. We learned from that, and here we are now.
Robert, didn't you study social psychology or something crazy?
I did. I'm actually a sociologist.
So oh, really?
A little bit of a behavioral science.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's pretty interesting. Is there a reason why you particularly sought this kind of venture out?
Just because I thought that, technologies being applied to and specifically understanding behavioral economics in the advertising world, mm-hmm. I felt like there was a better place to apply some of those strengths, both on the technology side and the behavior change side. And I mm-hmm. did not see enough technology happening in the whole behavioral health world. And I felt like that was that didn't make any sense. I felt like there should be just as many people that have focused on machine learning or artificial intelligence, applying that greatness to health as they are applying it to figuring out how to sell you stuff.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this. This is one thing I kind of struggle with, right? Like when I look at innovation, a lot of people synonymize. Is that a word? Synonymize. Sure. I'm going to go with it. They synonymize technology with innovation. Right
now, I know what synonymize means.
That was a little bit of a teaser. It was like a trailer for whatever thought I was coming up with.
Yeah,
for you or in your world, I know you invest in technology, but does technology necessarily mean innovation? Right, like if I innovate a process, or when you first said sort of a fitness kind of thing, I think physical exercise, right? Yeah. And maybe there's innovation in techniques by which Sean T gives you gorgeous abs in 25 minutes.
Right.
There's some innovation there. There is some science to it, but it's not necessarily the metal helmet with the antennas on it.
Yeah, I agree. We talk about at BeLife, we talk about building the company on three principles. One is design, science, and technology. So we look at those three things and innovating in design, innovating in science, innovating in technology. You don't have to innovate if you're in either one of those spaces, but if you want to do something different, in our opinion, you do.
Right.
So design innovation for us means delivering assessments the normal way might be a Likert scale, look like a standardized test. Well, the future assessment, if you will, doesn't look like a normal test. It might involve voice. It might involve picking pictures. It might involve some design innovation on a basic test question.
Right.
So we think that – I actually think that there's more opportunity for innovation in design, actually, than there is in technology. Maybe that's because I'm closer to being a designer than I am a technologist in terms of an actual developer. But
that's great. And then you fast forward, I think, right, to MoviePass. Was that next?
Yeah. Well, I started MoviePass.
And can I have one?
Yes, we'll get you a movie pass. He's serious.
Okay. No, I'm dead serious. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah.
Podcasts are binding.
There you go. This is a contract right here.
Right.
So I started both Movie Pass and BeLife around the same time with co-founders. As I mentioned, I started BeLife with my co-founder, Paul Campbell, and I started Movie Pass with my co-founder, Stacy Spikes. And in MoviePass, we wanted to innovate as well. We wanted to innovate around the movie-going experience. It's been the same pretty much for 50 years. You mm-hmm. just go buy a ticket and go to the movie. So we wanted to figure out if there was a subscription model that could work in the theatrical window the same way there's been a subscription model in basically every other window of content.
Right.
Exactly.
So we launched and in an industry where innovation is not as common, and I would say the theatrical business is not as innovative as many other industries.
And it needs it, though.
Like it needs it.
It needs it desperately.
Which was part of our thesis, but it wasn't necessarily well-received by everyone when we first launched. We had some pretty aggressive friction from some of the exhibitors. They didn't quite understand what we were doing. Mm-hmm. We've since made friends with them, and they now do understand. And I think many of them are welcoming to welcoming innovation in general, because they know they need it.
That's great.
That's awesome. So, how do you measure performance in terms of MoviePass, right? And also BeLife. Like, are you looking at downloads? Are you looking at like how people's lives are changed, right? You know, where MoviePass is more of a convenience play versus BeLife, which is like I'm changing in some sort of way.
Yeah, I'll start with MoviePass just because we were on that one. I think we are trying to build the next Netflix, if you will, and it's for an entirely different window, obviously. So there's a lot of things that we have to innovate around in that process. We think there's some really interesting things to do where you're taking people from an offline subscription into something online. We think there's a lot to do with this, the social network that's face to face and building on some opportunity around social and movie going. Mm-hmm. And the way we measure it is we want to be a very big membership. We want to have millions of members one day that don't go to their movies a la carte, but go to their movies through a membership on a subscription basis. And again, with MoviePass, you can spend one price per month and go pretty much every day. Every 24 hours you can go. So it's truly the first untethered movie-going experience there is.
And just to explain to people who might not have like seen what MoviePass is, could you explain like what the service is to them and, you know, kind of give them a little background on what they get to do from that pass?
Yeah, I'll try to paint the picture because we innovated by necessity to build the product. So I'm not going to show because we're not on camera. But
I still want to see it though. Like on the website, it's like a card, right? And I mean, it appears to be one.
Yeah, it's an actual card that comes with your name on it, and it comes in a beautiful leather box. And
is that a 20?
That's a 20.
Wow.
There you go.
I want to be an innovator.
So the MoviePass, it comes with your name on it. Pass it to you. It looks like a standard credit card, but it's bright red and mm-hmm. says your name and it says MoviePass. Right. And when you unbox that in your beautiful, thank you, beautiful leather box, then you authenticate that or you connect that to your mobile device by opening up our app and putting in the last four digits of this card number. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, this card and that phone are inextricably linked.
Right.
So this card is connected not only to the app, but to the UID in your phone.
Okay.
The reason for that is we use location to authenticate that you are you when you're in that theater. Mm-hmm. So you go into the theater, you're prompted to check in with the app. When you check in with the app, this card becomes live and you can use it to gain access to about 93% of the theaters in the country.
Nice.
Wow. Well, now what's up with the other seven?
Yeah. Well,
where are those?
You may not want to go.
Well, Robert was asking earlier about the adult theaters and if he could use it.
Yeah, there, you know, we're not. Yeah.
That is at 7%.
That was an offline conversation.
Well, you know, you say it could end up on the show.
I didn't even know they had adult theaters anymore.
Ask Robert.
I thought it was all home video.
Well, I do know that part of it.
Okay.
Personal. So MoviePass sounds awesome, right? Definitely. Like I showed it to my wife last night. We were like, perfect. Like this is amazing. Then you make your way to. Oh no, let me back up actually, because you said you launched these two things at the same time
Around the same time. And you asked how I measure the success for BeLife.
Right. No, but what I was going to ask, and just jumping around a little bit, is how do you do it? Like, how do you launch two companies simultaneously? Right. Because you know, I think a lot of people, especially up and comers, right, when they go like, "Oh, I got all these great ideas," they start actualizing, and then you know the saying is, "If everything's a priority, then nothing's a priority."
Oh yeah.
Or you start spreading yourself thin, you don't do anything well because you're juggling too many balls.
Yes.
So I'm curious as to how do you see success on both of these things?
Yeah.
Simultaneously.
Well, time will tell whether I will ultimately be successful with both of these. I mean, they're still young companies.
Right.
I think it does start with having great co-founders. I definitely would not have done this had I not had great co-founders in both of them. There's no way I would have even attempted it. And I got a lot of advice against doing two companies when I started. And I listened to that advice, and some of it made sense to me. Some of it I felt like I wanted to go against the grain. I think today's venture capital model and today's startup model a lot different from when it was or how it was 5 years ago. And I actually think that there's a lot more you can do sort of at the same time now than you could before. I think the key is figuring out what learnings you can get that you can apply to both.
Right.
And then what networks apply to both. And then obviously it all starts with people. And so having a great co-founder in both of these companies was the only way I would do it.
What was the one, if you remember, one piece of advice that you got that you were like, ooh, that's a...
That one might be a good piece of advice.
Yeah.
I think I got some early advice that, I was thinking at one stage that maybe the best way to do this was to actually form an incubator or to form a lab of some sort.
Right.
And to do it all from under that one roof. And certainly cosmetically, that's actually an easier story to tell to the outside. Because, I just have one deal. I just have many things under that. Mm-hmm. Then I got some good advice that said, there's not a whole lot of people that have built distinct value in an incubator.
Right.
You certainly had Idea Lab and CMGI, in the early 2000 time period that had built a lot of value getting ready to go public, and then the market shut down. But there's really been no one that has done that at scale and created value in the incubator. It's always been that the value has been created with the underlying companies.
Right.
So I decided to actually do separate companies. I mean, the other advice, which I did take, was I spent much more time, certainly in the early phases, with Bee Life. I was co-CEO of Bee Life. I was chairman, I still am chairman of MoviePass. Now that I've started to invest and been working with Upfront Ventures as a venture partner, I have taken a chairman role in both of those companies.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect segue. You're doing great. As in terms of investing, right, I just wrote a note that says, crappy idea, good team versus good idea, crappy team. Where do you find the balance, right? Where
you got to start with a great team,
right?
Yeah, start with a great team. Easy.
And what do you look for on those teams, right? Because if Robert and I have an idea, right, and we've bootstrapped up to point X, and another team has either done the same thing, like how do you make that distinctive decision?
Intestinal fortitude. Sort of communication capabilities, all those basic things. I shouldn't say they're all basic, because I think a lot of people overlook the fact that if you partner with someone that doesn't have the stomach for a startup, then you're pretty much screwed. Mm-hmm. So you got to make sure that you have someone that's ready to go all the way, and that they're not going to be scared off by the first thing that the first issue you have.
Yeah.
Right.
What was the other part of the question?
No, that was it. It was just kind of like, what are some of the, when you are kind of like filtering through the opportunities that come your way? Because I would imagine you see, 100 different ideas a week or so? And that's a tough filter, because you may see somebody who's like completely likable in the idea. Like, do you want to...
Oh, in terms of from an investment standpoint?
Yeah, definitely.
So from an investment standpoint, I think... it's definitely still, for me, starts with the people, and it works out usually that the right people are going after the right markets.
Right.
Right. Not always the case, but oftentimes it is. If the person has the right kind of experience, the right kind of perspective, they're going after a big market.
Right.
And they're going to work with other great people. Mm-hmm. Themselves are going to be hopefully innovative.
Sorry. Do you ever get hate mail from people that you've turned down?
I
can't believe you. This is the best idea ever. It's like American Idol when the contestants, they don't know what they're talking about.
I'm sure I will. I've gotten some not so nice notes, but I'm still new. I'm a couple months in from the investment standpoint. And because I also sit on the entrepreneurial side, I think I have empathy. So, when I do pass on something, I'm saying it in a respectful way, and I'm saying, I'm still trying to be encouraging and still trying to help folks.
Right.
Because it's hard out here.
No, the other thing is, I mean, you mentioned like 5 years ago, this business was completely different, right? And I feel like there are hundreds of incubators. There's hundreds of people who are not in incubators who have ideas. There's, all different ideas and products are coming from left, right, and center. Like, it's hard to field. And also, what the sustainability of that sort of influx of creativity and ideas and tools and everyday life fulfillment kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, how do you stay? Because you actually schooled me pretty well when we were talking about honey. We had a little conversation about honey crystals. And, you know, I was thoroughly impressed by.
By the way, I don't know if that factually was correct.
No, but it sounded good. Yeah, so yeah. I left with a tear in my eye. Okay. But no, but it was kind of like you have to know at least a percentage of what these people are coming to you with idea-wise. And we just to tell you, Robert, we had a conversation about a guy I know who has some honey crystals. Like, how you put sugar packets in your coffee? He's mm-hmm. like, honey crystals. And honey he was like, hey, well, that doesn't even work. Like, and he starts telling me about what honey looks like under a microscope and how it works and the scientific properties of it, which I thought was just really interesting from, you know, an entrepreneurial investor standpoint to be that well-versed in something and be able to make a decision and use that in your sort of everyday, you know, life.
Yeah, I may have lucked up on that one because, I mean, I'm trying to stay focused on a couple themes, one of which is health and wellness.
Right.
I sort of put the quantified self world in that. And then the other theme I look at is the whole collaborative consumption and shared economy space. And by default, I see a lot of disruptive entertainment related stuff. So those are the three areas, you know, disruptive entertainment stuff, collaborative consumption or shared economy, whatever you want to call it, and then health and wellness and quantified self.
Right. So just backing up a little way back, how did this become your life? Right. Like what, you know, your dad's from Senegal. Like, was there something in your upbringing that was, you know, that kind of sparked who you are? I'm obviously who you are today that kind of, you know, you're obviously like just super smart. I'm, you know.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, just like how did you get here as an individual?
You know, I probably like yourself. I've always been super curious. Super curious about stuff. And my dad is an engineer, and I think always an entrepreneur at heart. Never really was an entrepreneur, but he was much more of an academic focused guy. But my brother and I both turned out to be entrepreneurs because we've been curious about stuff all our lives. So I've known since, I don't know, 13 or younger that I was going to be an entrepreneur. Started businesses very young. And it's to me, it all comes down to one thing, and this might be a common thing across all innovators, maybe even all people, and that's freedom.
Right.
And I feel like freedom is that thing I value the most. And being able to innovate or being able to start companies or being able to build companies is, to me, part of the sort of – it's the professional freedom that I think everyone at some level wants.
Right.
It's one of the reasons why I'm so excited about this whole collaborative consumption world.
Sure.
And for those of you guys that don't know, that's the whole – the Lyfts of the world, the Ubers of the world, the Airbnbs of the world. They're inspiring a whole new group of entrepreneurs. And my argument is they were entrepreneurs all the time. They just didn't have a real infrastructure to make it work.
Well, there's a woman we were talking about earlier who, speaking of collaborative consumption, basically highly professional, high-level executive, left her, you know, her penthouse apartment in Dallas and now is nomadic, as she calls it. Some would say homeless. But because of collaborative consumption, she can do this, right? She can go
couch surf.
Yeah, exactly. And she has, you know, she's developing clients and relationships all around the world, you know, and it's just become a lifestyle. And I feel like she's sort of at the apex of the possibility that's there. And just in terms of what that is, where do you see like that trend growing? Are there any other specific areas that you look at in collaborative consumption and go, ooh, that's going to be pretty awesome?
You know, I was taking a Lyft the other day, a Lyft car, and the driver was telling me that he doesn't have a normal job. He makes all of his money from Lyft, and he works at another company that does, I think it's called Wash.io, where he's, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's a laundry spot.
It's sort of collaborative consumption for laundry. I think he does some Elance or some Odesk stuff. So he's figured out how to stitch together enough income through these other platforms to make a living.
And
he's completely free. When he wants to go offline, he flips a switch and he's offline. No one gets mad. No one says he should show up for work, et cetera. So I think there's a huge future in that. I think it's a future of work. I think it might solve a lot of these unemployment issues.
Yeah.
I think it's going to – it goes to a lot of principles that I think – humans thrive on. I think people need autonomy in their life. They need freedom in their life. And right. I think to the extent these new platforms enable that, you'll have a lot more people doing it instead of going to normal 9-to-5s.
You just gave me an idea. Get my TaskRabbit account going, my Fiverr there account, and get all this stuff.
There you go.
Make $75 a week. So, that's awesome. And then, you know, are there any places that you look to specifically, right? If you had to choose three events to go through throughout the year to, like, collectively see all the best stuff, you know, is that going to be CES or is it like a particular summit or networking kind of thing that you go to?
Oh, that's a good question. I need some help from you on that. No, I go to CES. I go to I like South by Southwest, I think.
Right.
Just because it's a lot of fun. Good people like fun, so it works nice. Out.
I've never been, but I'm supposed to be on a panel this year. So I'm all excited now. I'm like, ooh.
You got to go to South
you get a plus
by
one, Austin, Chris? Here I come.
No.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
I like going to different stuff. I've been going a couple of years to Wisdom 2.0.
What's that one?
Which is sort of the future of wisdom. It's related to the stuff we're working on with Be Life, but very well attended by folks from Google and Facebook and, you know, people looking at sort of merging old wisdoms with new wisdoms. And there's a little bit of a technology thread there as well, but it was a totally different crowd. I like to stretch myself wherever possible. A lot of hugs in this crowd, right. Just a different type of vibe, almost more of a hippie vibe.
It's like an orphanage almost. It's like you're just going in.
Yeah, I guess.
Just getting hugs. That's awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, I like those kinds of things too. I love to be able to pull different thinking from things I don't see every day.
Exactly.
Right? I want to be wowed in some way and take whatever that wow factor was and see
and
how
be uncomfortable, right? Right? Innovation comes from uncomfort in many cases.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. What is, speaking of discomfort, I mean, have you ever been in that situation? I think of Shark Tank for some reason.
Yeah.
And like those moments feel so uncomfortable, right? When you're pitching and you've got a panel of people you need to talk to, you're rehearsed or are you loose? Like what? I guess it's more of like the art of the pitch, right? And,
yeah.
And kind of walk us through that. Just
the art of the pitch in terms of me pitching or in terms of me.
Either way, because you've been on both sides, right?
Yeah.
You've been on both sides. And
it helps, by the way, being on both sides.
Yes. Well, more people are on the asking side than on the offering side. But I would love, you know, just kind of like what are some of the things you look for when either you are pitching, right? Like what are some of the points you want to hit, the passion points of whoever you're talking to, even if it's a cold room, right? You go into a cold room and you're like, okay, cool. And you have to sort of navigate the conversation, the product features, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, a big part of it, and I have a greater appreciation for it now being on the investor side. Or sort of being on both the investor and the entrepreneurial side. You know, as an entrepreneur, I said I only want to take money from folks I would co-found a company with. And so, you know, now I'm trying to be that guy on the investor right. side. I don't want people feeling like above and beyond. I don't want people feeling like we're not developing a real relationship. And I think there are times where I'm on the entrepreneurial side where I'm thinking, I just got to close on a financing, I got to close on a round. And I forget that it really, you're going to have to live with the person for a long time. So it does make sense to really get to know them. And it sounds a little cliche, but that's a really important part of getting things done.
That's awesome. Upfront, recently changed from GRP, right?
Yep.
Why the name change? Do you know?
Well, yeah, I do know. So GRP Partners stood for Global Retail Partners, which is where the firm sort of had its initial roots in retail innovation. It's now doing a whole lot more than just retail innovation, but that's where it got started. It was actually the retail investment banking practice out of DLJ that spun into this Global Retail Partners. So GRP Partners was actually kind of redundant because it was GRPP.
Right. It's like an ATM machine.
Yeah. So that needed to get fixed. And then I think, you know, with the new, more broader focus, I shouldn't say new, but a much more broad focus than just retail, it made sense to look for a new name. And Upfront, I think, says it all. It speaks to the personality of the firm. I think all of us want to be very upfront and try to be as upfront as possible. we try to sort of, you know, it's the what you see, what you get type of feel to the firm. And that's really the way the culture of the firm is growing up. So it's a new name. We're still, you know, growing into it, but we like it so far.
That's great. And so there was an announcement of 500 startups, earlier this year.
Yeah.
Along with the name change was a gigantic fund. I don't know how gigantic it was, but it was deemed the largest fund in LA, which I think you started off the interview.
$200 million.
$200 million. Why? And what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? Or not even what it does mean, but what does that allow the organization to do as sort of the largest fund in LA?
Well, I think the firm and, you know, my partner, Mark Suster, has been very aggressive in the ecosystem. And so he's already been doing that. I think, you know, having a large, fresh fund means you can do more of that, means you can, you know, hopefully get more people from other parts of the world and country to come here to start companies or to invest in companies. It just really means you're investing in the ecosystem.
Right.
We think there's something special to do here in LA in terms of company building and in terms of what we uniquely at, you know, in LA are good at doing. And so we want to shine a light on that and try to partner with some smart folks to do it.
How do you feel about Silicon Beach?
You know, I have friends that hate the term. I don't mind the term at all. I like it. I've actually made it work for me in some cases when I'm trying to recruit, you know, engineers down here. Just it has.
I'm sorry, did you say beach?
I know, exactly. A little fun feel to it.
You didn't say valley. You said beach.
Yeah, I do understand why people don't like it, because they don't like that we had to stick Silicon in front of it, you know, just because it feels like you're always going to be sort of second to, you know, Silicon Valley. Right. But
well, now there's Silicon Alley, which is New York. So it's just getting, it's all going downhill.
And there's something like, in
Silicon
Brooklyn.
Basement.
Do you hear about Brooklyn? There's something.
I don't know. Dumbo is the only thing, which is a horrible acronym, by the way.
Okay.
But no, there's one in Brooklyn, too.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. Maybe some of your listeners know. I heard something recently in passing. There's another, not Silicon
Valley.
We'll
look it up.
But yeah, we'll look it up.
But yeah, so I mean, because there's just a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of awesome things coming out of, you know, Silicon Beach, and you know, even with the festivals and the events that are popping up, and I've just always been sort of impressed with what LA has become.
Right.
It's had an interesting creative trajectory. What do you see are the benefits of being in LA versus anywhere else, really?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, this is arguably the creative capital of the world. I think the number of new brands that we build in Hollywood sort of dwarfs a lot of the brands that, or the efforts in other parts of the world. So I think there's some really strong creative skill sets that apply to software, that apply to consumer internet, that if they're paired with the right sort of engineering talent can be amazing. And I think, so going back to the point around Silicon Beach, anything that helps us get engineers here and keep them here is good. And so I think, part of innovation is design and creativity. Part of innovation is building and experimentation and testing. And so we have some of those skill sets, certainly on the design and creative side, but not as many on the engineering side, certainly not compared to what's happening in Silicon Valley. I think the culture for innovation around technology-driven startups is not as strong as it is up north. So I think to the extent we do more of these kind of things, we can hopefully let people know that we're trying to do lots of experimentation and discovery, and we want to innovate down here.
Yeah, I think it's a different vibe. Like I think it's a more exploratory vibe, right? I think Silicon Valley, and I haven't spent much time there, but I feel like it's a little bit more business than it is the creative. And I think you need both. I could be absolutely wrong, but you know.
I think there's definitely, I know what you mean. I would say, though, that, you know, when I spend time up there, I feel like the creative energy around company building is strong. Or I should say even the creative energy around building amazing products is strong, even before building a company. And I'd say down here, that creative energy is much more focused on creative content projects. So I'd love for more of that creative product building to happen here, and that innovation. And, you know, in Starbucks up there, I'm sure you've heard this, Starbucks you'll see people huddling around a laptop thinking about, you know, the next big thing and trying to build the next big
right.
thing.
Down or here, listening to Innovation Crush.
Or, yeah, hopefully listening to Innovation Crush. I'm sure they are. Or, you know, down here, they're huddling around a script and they're talking about a script, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I just love for more folks to be, you know, innovating and building cool companies.
I'm interested in also seeing, like, every year there's a creative economy report that comes out, and it looks at the entire ecosystem of the creative industry. So film, television, art, you know, anything that is a little bit more ethereal and not like hard edged business. And it looks at like, okay, Paramount shot, you know, released 6 movies last year. Those movies grossed this much at these theaters. Those theaters hired these employees, you know, those employees live in these neighborhoods, and they do it for LA and Orange County. And when you look at the billions of dollars that the creative industry generates, I mean, you look at the big art exhibit, the Pacific Time or something like that. It was the first time LA had really done something across all of its art institutions. And so you look at like what they grossed in ticket sales to what the parking company made, you know, for the events that were happening and taking place down to the cleaning crews is just really amazing. But now that we have this more, there's a lot more technology integration to the creative side of it.
Right.
And it's just a growing and bubbling thing. I'm super curious about it.
You mean we should try to do the same thing for technology-oriented
stuff? I would think that they would start incorporating this, right? I would think that they would start incorporating what's happening in the creative technology space, because this report is put out by Otis College and a couple of other institutions. And it's just really interesting that...
That's a great idea.
It is.
Can we put a call to action out to your listeners right now?
Hey.
All email?
Hey, yes, exactly. There, you heard it here, folks.
There we go.
Call to action. I know we don't have you for much more time, so I want to ask you to fill in the blank on something.
Okay.
Innovation to me is...
Freedom. Innovation to me is freedom. So you have to have freedom going into innovation. You have to take down any preconceived ideas or constraints in an ideal sense to come up with an innovation. And then to be in a position where you're fortunate enough to continually innovate is a form of freedom to me.
That's awesome. And true. how can people find you where you want them to find you? What's your home address?
Exactly. Damn, I almost slipped up and gave it.
I know, right?
Best way to find me, I guess, is on LinkedIn. I have a Twitter. I'm relatively new on Twitter in terms of being a contributor. I've been more of a lurker.
Well, you're busy building other things better than Twitter.
So my Twitter is Hame Watt. So it's HAMETWATT. That's probably the best way.
All right. I will Twitter stalk you and I will ghostwrite your tweets. You'll be like, I didn't say that.
Yeah. Trying to get some followers. You know, I'm a new jack at you know, in terms of the outward part of it. But
we'll make sure you get all hooked up. I want to thank you personally. I don't know about Robert. I don't know how you feel over there.
It was all right.
Thank you both.
Great having you, man.
Yeah, this is awesome. Thank you, everybody. This has been another Innovation Crush. Thank you, Hame Watt, for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.